public opinion is maybe stepping outside your comfort zone a little bit, reading some articles outside of your culture, outside of your educational background, outside of, you know, read articles about the interests of little girls if you are never a little girl, read articles about African culture if you've never lived in Africa or been part of an African culture, read the talk pages, don't edit them, observe how things are done. Check out, just sort of measure, keep in mind in your head, is this one quite as long as the article about Teenage Ninja Turtles? If not, what, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? If not, why not? Just start asking those questions. And so I think, it takes a while to actually come to talking to people. You have to do a lot of reading, a lot of thinking of your own first. So that is actually what I'd suggest. In terms of communication styles, assume good faith is a good one. The next step, I think, after that is if somebody says you are damaged, in particular somebody from if you happen to know that they're from an underrepresented group or trying to improve representation of an underrepresented topic and so on, if somebody says you are hurting them and stopping them from doing that, listen. And it's very easy to be defensive. Everyone feels that. We had a feedback, so we ran an AD camp for women, mostly women, in the 2 weeks, 2 days before this, and we had a feedback session at the end. We were like, okay, how can I make this better? It's bad to sit there and listen to that. And for example, they complained that there wasn't a wireless mic. They're like, do you know how hard we worked? And so I recognize that tendency. Be like, oh, you're hurting my ability to represent my culture on Wikipedia. Do you know how hard I'm working to make that not true? But again, ultimately what you have to do is that your first response should be to believe them. And listen to what they say. They say, look, you are, they won't probably phrase it as you are hurting them, but if the discussion is becoming unproductive for them, try and figure out how to change it, and if you can't figure out how to change it, withdraw from the conversation. I'm told this is the last question. Okay, but it's a good last question. So, it's hard to be told that the first thing to do is to shut up and listen, but the first thing to do is to shut up and listen.
And then then it happened again, and I'm like, oh my God, Wikipedia is invincible. So I saw this, and then I was totally hooked after that. So I started writing about things I cared about, like Chicago, where I'm from, graffiti, which was no enthusiasm of mine. So fast forward to 2011, I started at the Wikimedia Foundation in San Francisco. And basically my job is to put a face on Wikipedia. It's really, really, really easy to see cold text on a screen and have no idea where it comes from. And so there's all these misconceptions people have in the world. People think that Julian Assange runs Wikipedia. People think that there's 100,000 paid academics somewhere in these, you know, huge towers somewhere who must be curating this thing. When you tell them it's open source, anyone can edit, well, who's policing this? How does this work? People just have no clue how this thing works and that it's made by volunteers and it's made how it is. Last year, in 2011, you may have seen some of the banners. The fundraiser, which is technically the team I work with, is a fantastic way to show that face. Who is Wikipedia? And so this year, we're going to be doing that as well. We're going to be doing it more extensively, but we're also going to be doing something different. The goal this year is to have a video, to start the fundraiser with a video that explains what is Wikipedia, who makes it, in the voice of the people who make it. So what we have here, can everybody who's on the team here stand up if you're here? I don't know who's here. I see Brian over here. Here we got some more people over here. So these are the people you can talk to if you want to share your story with our team. Let's see here. We have a booth on the third floor of the Continental Ballroom, Marvin Center. You can sign up to tell your story. The video that we're expecting to produce, we have, it's going to be rough. The idea is that it's about roughly 2 minutes, and we're going to start the fundraiser this year with that. So if you have any other questions or anything else, please come to our booth, sign up. We're also going to be doing audio interviews if you don't want to be on video or anything like that. So thank you for your time, and I hope you will share your story with us. Everybody has a totally different reason for being involved, and it's really interesting to talk to everybody and find out why they're involved. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Victor. May you receive several stories of Wikipedia's invincibility. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the founder of Wikipedia, Mr. Jimmy Wales.
Very good. Well, this is always, every year, this is my most difficult speech. I mean, speeches all over the world all the time, of course, but this is the one speech where I'm absolutely certain that everyone in the audience knows more than I do about Wikipedia. I'll try to share a few thoughts and things that I've learned. What did Mary call us? You have to spin in a circle? And then so thank you very much for your presentation about the AIDA initiative. Unfortunately, this year, the first time ever, I'm going to have to leave Wikimania a bit early. And one of the reasons is because I've been working on my own AIDA initiative, Baby AIDA. My partner and I named our daughter AIDA after AIDA Countess of Lovelace because I think she'll someday make a really great Wikipedian. The only evidence I have for this so far is that I've actually seen her throw down chocolate to lunge for the iPad. I'm optimistic here. So moving forward. I wanted to talk about Wikimania so far. This is an incredible conference, and we're just going to raise hands for this part because we're going to make you stand up in a minute. I'm just curious to know how many of you were here for Frankfurt? Good. And who was here for Boston? Taipei. Well, that's good. Alexandria. Buenos Aires. Can I ask? Haifa. Fun. So lots of people have been here lots of times. But then something that's become something of a little bit of a tradition, just to make sure everybody's awake. I'm going to make you all stand up now. How many people started editing in 2012 or earlier? Or earlier. I had never entered the beginning. And then you'll sit down one by one. How many of you started in 2011 or earlier?
Oh wow, almost everybody. Nobody, not many people here who just started this year.
2010? 2009, 2008, wow, this is a pretty stable crowd. 2007,
oh come on, I'm gonna knock somebody down in a minute.
2006, 2005,
there we go, now we're starting.
2004, about Wikipedia and about Wikipedians. Many of you have seen this meme floating around the internet called What I Do. And thanks to Guillaume of Wikimedia France, who first did one of these about Wikipedia, and I've modified it somewhat. I've got my own version here. So what society thinks we do, as Victor mentioned, they think we work in big cubicles. It's a giant office building, and we're just, beavering away, typing. Of course, this one is actually not true. Here's the next one. What do our families think we do? This is actually true, at least to me. So on to the next one. What Congress thinks we do? Quite true. This is the Incredible Hulk, of course, but we are not the Incredible Hulk. Let's switch to the next slide. We'll see if we appear the Incredible Hulk. This is likely what a man is going back on my radio facts and talking with his sources. I actually wanted to, I think this is the funniest thing I've seen on the internet in a while. I want to take credit for it, and I spent a lot of time trying to hunt down who said this first, and I couldn't figure out where this meme came from, so I can't really get the credit. Unfortunately, but it's not me. So if we go forward, what publishers think we do? And then what do we think we do? Click. Oh, yeah. Given free access to the sum of all human knowledge. What I wanted to talk about, I wanted to talk a little bit about the internet and the situation in Africa. This is really the actual, quite minimal, content portion I want to speak. This is what you know. This is what you probably think you know. This is the most common thing. If I start to talk about the internet in Africa with people, one of the things people say is, I know. Yes, people in Africa can use their mobile phone to get prices of crops so they can carry their crops to the right market and make more money. The news media loves this story. But this is really not very accurate. It's true enough, but it really clouds the mind. If you're thinking about the internet in Africa is about subsistence farmers getting better crop prices, you're really missing something very, very important that's going on. So what you probably don't know, although in this crowd you probably do know, some of you do anyway. So this is my phone. This is the phone that I carry. A friend of mine bought this phone for me in Kenya for $80. It's an Android phone, so it has apps and has everything on it. The screen is smaller than an iPhone. It's not quite as good as an iPhone, but it works perfectly well. Unlike most phones that most people would carry in this audience, my battery actually lasts for 2 days. Let's take a look at internet usage. So just think about that, $80, that is not yet reaching the poorest people in the world compared to just a few years ago when a phone like this couldn't exist, or a couple years ago when a phone like this, the only phone would have been maybe the iPhone at $600, $800. When we've gotten the price down to $80 so quickly, it is having a huge impact. They've sold hundreds of thousands of these in Kenya already. So let's just take a look. Can we go back one slide, please? It is really random. I think there's a human. I think it's very weird technology. I think when I click this, a human somewhere is notified. And then they push it, and then, I don't know. That means there's two.
A pigeon is notified.
A pigeon is notified. No, I'm the pigeon. The human is trying to interpret my pigeon up on stage. So, I just want to look at one country, Nigeria, and look at the rate of internet access in Nigeria. In 2000, it was 0.1% of the population online. 2006, 3.1%, 2009, 61%, and 2011, as of December 31st, there were 29% of people in Nigeria online. Let me go forward one slide. That actually seems to work better, sort of verbally discussing what's going to happen. The total bandwidth into Nigeria, and this is really what's driving a lot of change in Nigeria, but also across Africa broadly, is that the total bandwidth, so a lot of new undersea cables have been laid. The bandwidth has gone from 72 megabits to 693 megabits, and by the end of 2012, they're going to have 12 terabits of connectivity into Nigeria. Now, what does this mean practically? If we click one slide forward. In my hotel this morning, I got 2.44 megabits download, 1.28 upload. When I was in Lagos, Nigeria a few months ago, look at that. 9.3 down and 11, almost 11 and a half up. It's better up than down. It's amazing. Now, it's important. I tweeted about this, and I got a fairly high number of kind of angry tweets back from people in Nigeria saying, this is not realistic, this is not true. Well, it's true in the sense that I was at a fancy hotel conference it brought me to, very near the point where the cable comes in and all that. It is absolutely true that this kind of bandwidth has not yet made its way to ordinary consumers everywhere across Nigeria. But the fact is that there is so much bandwidth that's coming into the country, retail prices are going to drop substantially, and that number of 29% is going to reach 50% before we know it. So what impact does this have? If we click forward. So what are people doing online? This is actually the key thing. What I'm really trying to wake people up to is the idea that if you're thinking about subsistence farmers doing, getting crop prices and all this, you're really missing something very important. Let me just bring up each of these bullet points. Are they searching for prices for crops? Are they reporting malaria outbreaks? This is all sort of the Western mythology of what Africa is all about. Maybe, yeah, sure. I'm sure some people are doing those things, but what are they really doing? If we go to the next slide. We can just load all of these bullet points, please. The top sites are Google, Facebook, Twitter, Wikipedia, local newspapers. The important point to understand here is that when people in Africa get online, what they do online, they do all the same things everybody else does online. And that's really important to think about. The ongoing market of technology is making real and usable internet access available to tens of millions across Africa today. And a lot more is coming in the near future. So what you need to know is if you think forward 5 to 10 years, we're going to have massive connectivity all across the entire world, including places where we normally think that they're very far behind. We have massive connectivity to the real internet for hundreds of millions of people, and those people do not necessarily speak English or French. We're already seeing this in India. There used to be the situation in India where you could quite possibly say, well, look, virtually everyone in India who has a computer and is on the internet can speak English. That is no longer true in India. There are huge numbers of people who don't speak English, and that's incredibly important. And one of the reasons that we believe in having Wikipedia in every single language. So this is our mission, of course, free access to some of all human knowledge for every single person on the planet. Just move forward. So I want to talk a little bit about the largest languages we have in the African languages. So Yoruba has just passed in a great month. Is there anybody here from Nigeria, actually? No. I think we maybe need to change that next year. Is there anybody here from Swahili Wikipedia? I think that's probably more likely. Yes, a few. Yeah. So the internet, Yoruba has about 30,000 articles. I'm going to talk more about that in a minute. I think that Swahili and Afrikaans, so anybody from Afrikaans Wikipedia? Yeah. Swahili and Afrikaans Wikipedias, in another sense, are actually more successful than Yoruba. And I'm going to talk more about Yoruba. Swahili and Afrikaans both have active, real, live communities and are really moving forward with work. Let's just talk about Yoruba, though. Clicking through, adding all these bullet points. Yoruba had a huge surge of articles last year. They went from, and hold on the slide, went from 15,000 to 29 or 30,000 in 1 month. The articles were done by a bot, which you might think is kind of cheating. But it reminds me of Polish Wikipedia a few years back, when they had a lot of articles with bot. And, of course, English Wikipedia. One of the things that people who are more new to the project may not realize is that there was a point in time when English Wikipedia went from, I don't remember the exact number, but something like 30,000 articles to 60,000 articles, because RamMan wrote RamBot, and we added an article about every little village and town in the United States based on census data and so forth. That was actually really miraculous, because when the project was still small, I got an email from someone, and they had typed into Google, and they were like, oh my god, Wikipedia must be so huge. They have this small town where I grew up with only 73 people in it. How did you do that? So, although you might consider it cheating, I actually think that this kind of thing, if it's culturally appropriate and adding the right information, I don't recommend that people use RamBot to add articles about the United States in every language in the world. But as long as you've got a sensible idea for a robot, I think that it's quite valuable in a very small language Wikipedia to add a lot of articles for, if nothing else, search engine optimization purposes. So, just to conclude a little bit about Africa before I move on to the next section, the story of the internet in Africa in the next 10 years is not a story about charity, it's not a story about subsistence farmers, it's not a story about SMS, it's a story about normalization, it's a story about joining the global conversation. We've got tens and hundreds of millions of people who are coming online for the first time, and they're not doing weird foreign alien things that we can think about as, oh, those poor Africans. They're doing totally normal things. They're getting on Twitter and Facebook and doing everything that we do, and I think that's incredibly, incredibly exciting. So now it's time for Jimbo's awards. Yay! So I started this last year, and I hope to make it an ongoing tradition. Last year, for the first time, I gave the Wikipedian of the award, of the Year Award to Ruan, who is here somewhere. Can we stand up? Here? From Kazakh Wikipedia. I offered a donation to the Kazakh Wikipedia community and to visit Kazakhstan. Neither of those things has actually happened yet, but the offer still stands, and actually I met with the ambassador from Kazakhstan this morning, and we're planning a trip there as soon as possible so that I can give him an award in the presence of the president or prime minister, whoever we can wrangle to come to that. And so now, for this year, I'm going to do, again, the Wikipedian of the Year, and then after that I'm going to do Staff Member of the Year, which is my new concept. So, to announce the Wikimedian of the Year, it was User Demi, who almost no one knows because he's the sole lonely guy who's plugging away.
Google Wikipedia that I just spoke about. His accomplishment, and unfortunately Jimmy is not here today, he created about 15,000 articles using a bot, and the result, and this is why I think this is actually a viable exercise, is that you look at Wikipedia went to having 1 to 2 active editors, so almost no one there, to having 4 to 6 active editors. So he's just beginning a community there. A few people are coming in, and part of the reason is they're finding things in search, and they're going, they're finding a little thing, and they're thinking, as we heard today, you know, Aardwolf, one sentence, this is really crap, I should fix this. And so people start to become active. So I wish that Jimmy were here, but he isn't. So if anybody wants to edit his page and tell him that he has no idea, I'm going to give him $5,000. And this time, for Ruan's award, I said I would give it to the forming chapter or proto chapter, or to help with the chapter to bring together for a conference. In this case, there is no chapter, so I'm going to let him decide how to use it. I think perhaps I will encourage him to use it to help promote Wikipedia, or even, I don't know if he has a... I know nothing about the guy. It's a, sort of the typical Wikipedian. He's doing amazing work. I have absolutely no idea who he is.
I'd like to talk to him.
Yeah, I should talk to him. That's a good idea. I left him a message on his phone, and he didn't respond. So he seems like a nice guy. Anyway, but we'll see. So that's really great. So now the staff member award. This is a new award. It's very difficult to decide, in part because I just thought of this yesterday. In true Wiki fashion, didn't actually put together a huge committee to do something. I just thought, that sounds cool, I should do this. So next year, I think we should have some process to do it. I'm going to talk to Sue, and maybe the staff members can select among themselves or something like that. But for this year, I made 2 selections. And so for the first selection, I'm going to actually, I said, do not be careless with these bullet points, or you'll give away the punchline. One bullet point, please. To introduce the selection, I'll ask Philippe to come up on stage.
Because I get to talk to contributors and readers every day. But one of the neatest things that I get to do is to find interesting people in the community and help find cool ways for them to develop. And I've gotten to do that through Maggie, Moonridden Girl, who is M. Dennis on the wiki. And she is the first of the 2 staff members of the year. So I'll always going to go get her, if you could. Because she's hiding somewhere over here. And she is truly hiding. Sure.
In sort of mystical Hasidic Judaism, there's this concept of the Lamed Vav Tzaddikim, which are the 36 righteous ones. And the idea is that there are these people who go around doing good deeds, and in doing so, hold up the world. And the crucial bit is they're so righteous, they don't even know that they're righteous, because to do so would give them arrogance, which would undermine the point. And when I'm dealing with Maggie, the thing that comes to mind is the idea of someone who does incredible work and keeps everything together, the whole time oblivious to just how fantastic her contributions are. So it seemed like an appropriate metaphor to use. And we got her a small gift inspired by her username, or the other way around.
So now for the second selection. I guess some of you may have seen the ceiling cat memes. And I turned to this slide to introduce sort of the topic and the rationale for this selection. If we just click forward slowly, please. Our fundraiser has been incredibly successful. And as we near, and we're getting very, very near, 500 million users per month, click. when we run the fundraiser, a lot of people see it. I was told around 80 million people a day. Is that about right? Somebody must know. Anyway, it's a pile of people. One of the things about when 80 million people a day or 500 million people a month see something, click. The internet tries to have a sense of humor. So next slide, please. Some people are funny. I actually like this one. they were running past the internet. Scopophobia, the unreasonable fear of being seen or being stared at. That's actually funny. Next one. Some people are not. The 800th different one, it's just not that funny. So if we click forward a little bit. For me personally, this is not a huge problem. I've been in the public eye for a long time, and I get benefits from it, and there are downsides from it. One of the funny benefits, which I personally find to be the most amusing aspect of my body, if you click forward one, is that I'm now a watch model. My posters are, and it's, by the way, it's really the most successful thing in China. My posters are all over China, advertising watches. So I get some benefits from it, and the people know my face. That's all really lovely. But this past year, we had other people who participated, and for them, it maybe doesn't have any benefits, but they got the downsides of loads and loads of public attention. And so our new hero, the first person who really was able to raise as much money as me, because people love giving him money. If we click forward, Brandon here. So Brandon, you know, suddenly went from really being from the stairs in a second, to a sort of international celebrity overnight with all the downsides and none of the upsides. For the prize, I'm going to give him my actual watch. I will also be giving Patty a watch from Maurice Lacroix, who, by the way, isn't sponsoring the award. They just give me watches once a year. And I might as well, you know, how many watches do we need? I've got another one. So, there's your watch. And thank you so much for being brave enough to go out there and do all that. Literally thousands of people, and because I have such a terrible memory, I can only remember like Ada's name. I'm really good at playing along with, oh yeah, Tommy.
Especially when I'm a girl.
Yeah.
And it's a key on me. But here's my question.
Yes.
The Ada initiative is so important. I'd like to see your picture during your fundraiser saying, did you know that your cultural identity, your cultural history, everything that you stand for can be preserved through your participation here. Because
yes,
I think,
right.
You know, that's...
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
I think that's a really great concept. And in fact, Zach is here, and I think we will absolutely test some banners that talk about that, exactly that issue. Because I think that's really good, and I'll think about including that idea in my letter, because I think it really means a lot to a lot of people. And as we said before, one of the part of the reason we want a lot of people to turn out for the Storytellers event is that The fundraising provides us two opportunities. One, of course, we need the money, so we need to raise money. That's very important. And we have to choose the banners that actually perform well. That's a good thing. But it also provides us with an opportunity to let people know that I'm not the boss of Wikipedia, and that you are all the bosses of Wikipedia, and to introduce that idea. To introduce the idea that we're a diverse community and we want to be even more diverse and bring lots of people in. One of the things we absolutely need is more editors. We always need more friends. And I think the fundraiser is an opportunity to do that. And so I absolutely agree with you. Okay, next question. So I think I'll do what from before. I think we have three microphones. Yes, so somebody over here. And what I recommend, because I'm just going to be choosing randomly, that the people with microphones go ahead and pre-stage the question so we don't have to wait. So pick anyone, I don't really care. There's only one question in the audience.
Okay, me?
Yeah, I don't know where you are. Yeah, okay. Yeah, hi.
Hi, Chris Brock, Uniforms. So my question, so you're getting the information to more of the world right at a time when the internet is starting to balkanize, and countries are saying, it's our internet, like our country's internet, rather than our planet's internet. How is the Wikimedia community going to work to fight against that breaking apart of the internet? What's your plan?
Yes, so that's actually a very, very good question, and it brings us to the broader question of political activism and things of that nature. Before I talk about that, I actually have a really great story about e-diplomacy in the U.S. State Department from many years ago, and I believe it was a different administration at that time, and they would email me. I got an email saying, hi, we're the State Department's e-diplomacy initiative, and I'm not sure if they called it that back then, and we think you represent a lot of the really great old-fashioned American values of free speech and generosity. We think you make a great spokesperson for the U.S. and we would love to support you when you're traveling around and help you sort of arrange things and do things. And I said, oh, that's really great. And so they said, what can I do? That sounds wonderful. And they said, well, we can do a live web chat. And I said, okay. We'll have about 200 people on it. I'm like, okay. I mean, I talk to more people than that every morning, but so we did it, and it was really fun because the software, I think it was running on a mainframe from the 70s, you know, it was the most outrageous software. So I said, okay, but I did my part, and then a few months later, I got an email saying, hi, we're from the State Department, we want to do e-diplomacy. And I'm like, yeah, you already mentioned that before, you forgot me already. And then they said, is there anything we can do to help? And I said, yeah, actually, I want to visit Cuba. And I know that for Americans to visit Cuba, so you have to get a permit. Can you help me work on that? So they sent me a link to the website of the State Department where you can apply for a permit. But, thank you, Google. However, I will report that since then, I've had, since the administration change, I don't know if that has anything to do with it. It may just be an ongoing process of modernization. I've had really great support. When I was in Argentina, the State Department helped me sort of liaison with the media. I was in Bulgaria, I met with an ambassador. All around the world when I go now, the State Department has been much more helpful than they used to be. So thank you, all our friends from the State Department who are here today. Now, so obviously this year we had a huge impact with preventing the passage of SOPA and PIPA, which I think would have had, in many ways, this kind of impact on beginning or furthering the process of balkanization. Not least of which because the law treated foreign websites differently from domestic websites, and that's sort of the thin edge of the wedge. I think that we will continue to speak out, I will continue personally to speak out against that kind of balkanization of the internet and that kind of impulse to begin closing borders and things like that, because I think it's incredibly unhealthy for the planet, it's unhealthy for free culture and so forth. We have had now, I would say, three major events in which the Wikipedia community decided to become, to some extent, politically active. It started with the Italians, who went on strike against the proposed law of Berlusconi. When I first heard about this, which, by the way, I heard about it like
2 hours before they went black, such is the lovely nature of the randomness of Wikipedia. At first I thought, I actually have like 15 Italians here. I think they'll appreciate my humor here. At first I thought, well, they're Italian, so of course they're on strike. That's a really bad joke, but partly true. It was incredibly successful, and I thought, when I heard about it, I thought, well, you know, fine. I think that's actually a perfectly good thing. I thought, well, probably we would never do that in English Wikipedia, but I think it's really interesting. Of course, we did end up doing it in English Wikipedia, and actually just this week, the Russians decided to go dark for a day to protest censorship law there, and I have no idea yet what the outcome will be, but I'm hopeful because it certainly got a huge amount of press coverage there and around the world, so I'm hopeful that at least it puts governments on notice that, hey, the internet community cares about these things, and they care enough to actually do something about it, and so that's really important. I hope that we never have to do it again. I don't want us to become a site that goes on strike every 6 months over something. I think it should be reserved for only the most serious things that directly impact our work. I also think that we have to be very, very careful about our political neutrality. I think there are many issues that many of us feel very, very passionate about. If there's an impending war somewhere that many of us feel is the wrong thing, I think it would be very risky for us as a community to start getting involved more and more in different political issues. I think we should restrict it to things that directly impact our work in some fashion. However, what I really think we need to do is to have a big, open, friendly, thoughtful conversation in the community, and I know it's really hard because these are very emotional issues, to begin to help us define more broadly, before we need to decide at the last minute because some horrible laws are being passed, when should we do this and when should we not do that? I think that's something that we need to develop principles around so that when we do it, we know we're doing the right thing and that we really have the support, the full support of as broad a population of the community as possible to know that we're actually doing something sensible and thoughtful. So, having said all that, I think we will continue to speak out against these things where necessary. We may want to have some kind of a strike or whatever. And I'll do my part as much as possible and when I'm traveling and speaking to world leaders. And it's sort of funny. One of the funny things is, of course, everybody thinks I somehow run Wikipedia and that I'm the boss of everything. So when I go and visit government officials now, they're a little bit afraid. And I kind of look like this. Like, don't make me shut down Wikipedia. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's really up to you. It's up to the community to figure out how we're moving forward. So that's it. Okay, next.
We have one question from Twitter.
Yes,
Twitter. Hi, right here. Are there any efforts underway for a media wiki or a plain text editor for mobile platforms?
I have no idea. Yes or no? Yes. Yes. There's a lot of information on the internet about that. Now, I have to confess, I have done a very poor job of following the mobile initiative, and I know that lots of people are working really hard on mobile. I'm very happy to report that on my little tiny phone, the Wikipedia app looks really good, and the website looks really good. So, in terms of mobile editing, if I speak a little more broadly and more philosophically, I think the mobile editing, no matter how good the interface is always going to be very difficult and very problematic, just because of the form factor. If I'm editing on a thing like this, it's really, really hard. However, some people need to do it. Some people can do it. I think it is, when we talk about the next billion people who come online, a huge proportion of them are going to come online in developing countries on mobile devices of some kind. So I do think it's important, but I think it'll always be a small percentage of the overall work just because the form factor makes it really, really hard to do no matter how good the interface. Okay? Next, maybe somewhere this way.
I have, regarding like the initiative to diversity.
Yes.
And you know, something I've kind of stumbled upon lately is like there's this really diverse community of women on the internet from different languages, different cultures, all ethnicities, on YouTube giving makeup tutorials to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, they would do this, and in the comments there would always be questions about, like one of them was like, people would ask me, what's tightline? What's tightline? I was wondering if you could do it in your eye. Wikipedia, you put the tightline, there isn't even a redirect to eyeliner, nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't, and I think that what she said earlier in the interview that she was so great, because we can't like make these people be who we already are on Wikipedia, not defeats the purpose.
Yes.
So how can they get to the point where, you know, they can make videos on Commons? Because, I mean, that's what the community's already doing. The diverse female community on the internet is making videos for each other.
Right.
So how can we support them?
Yes, I think that is a really fabulous question. I think there are several elements that I can identify for this. And I think one of the most important elements is for us to all examine our premises and actually rethink the whole thing. And I actually think that makeup tips might be not the best example to use, although it's actually worth talking about. I'll talk about fashion in a moment, simply because for the typical tech geek male such as myself, it is very natural and very common. If you think, oh, women's topics, you don't think things like reproductive rights, you think, oh, makeup tips. So I think that's a risk. One of the risks we run is by thinking of women in that fashion. However, and I think this is really important, there was, when the royal wedding, Kate and William got married, and it was a huge, you know, billion people watching on television, public event, and somebody started an intrigue about Kate Middleton's dress. And immediately it was posted for deletion, and people thought, trivia, nonsense, how can you have an article about a dress? And I thought about that for a second, and thought, well, actually, the history of fashion, culture, you know, what the impact of Diana's fashion on the fashion world was tremendous. The impact of what Kate Middleton wears, in fact, it's quite famously, she wears things from, they call it the high street, but basically from department stores, like not expensive clothes. And that's, how, I mean, and whatever she wears, it sells out the next day. It's an enormous cultural impact. And so I actually went into the deletion debate, which I rarely do, and I pointed out that we have over 100 articles on different Linux distributions. Some of them quite obscure and not very popular and virtually no impact on the broader culture, but we think that's perfectly fine, and I think that's perfectly fine. As long as there's reliable sources, we should have it. I said, why don't we have the top 100 most famous dresses? The things that really, somebody wore something, a famous person or a new designer or something like this, and it changed the face of fashion forever and impacted all of our lives in a sort of way. It's culturally very, very important. And it's very difficult for those of us who either have absolutely no fashion sense, or if we have a fashion sense, it is simulated because someone picked our clothes for us. You know, why don't we? So part of it is thinking about our own attitudes about when we think about what is, what's encyclopedic or not. If we make that kind of basic error and we think, well, this can't be encyclopedic because, I don't know, it sounds like some fluffy girl topic, that is a huge mistake. At the same time, I think, you know, how many people in this room are parents? I think that's a really interesting, oh, actually, more than I thought. Well, great, you can help me. I'm actually really pleased and surprised by all that. Maybe it's because we're all getting older. But I find, as a parent, a lot of our entries on early childhood development are not as good as our entries on the USB standard. And that is absolutely reflects the makeup of our community. And there's nothing wrong with us writing about what we know about, but it's really important that we think more broadly to say, actually, one of the weaknesses of Wikipedia that we might be blind to is the topics that we're not totally absorbed by and interested in have very little coverage. And we haven't noticed it because it's not our interest. And so, as was pointed out earlier, when we look at the readership numbers and the traffic numbers, it reflects that if you're very, very interested in the cultural impact of fashion, and Wikipedia doesn't have anything, you end up somewhere else, and you end up doing something else. The other thing that I think is really, really important, and I talk about this really quite often in the press and so on, and I'm always very, very careful to make sure that people understand I am not saying girls aren't good at computers. My father doesn't edit Wikipedia. My father is quite an amateur expert and obsessed with 1960s era muscle cars. It's his hobby, he knows a ton about it. He would not edit Wikipedia. I'm happy to report he has moved beyond the stage of all caps emails. But still, when he clicks edit on Wikipedia, and like almost everybody on the planet, he's a perfectly nice person, he doesn't want to break anything, he clicks edit and he sees all this crazy wiki text markup language, and he's like, I don't really know what to do, and I'm afraid I'm going to mess something up. And so I do think initiatives like this, the visual editor that we're working on, and other initiatives for user engagement that really take into account that, gee, we want to attract a whole group of users who are geeks but not computer geeks. They know something, they want to share their knowledge, but they're not doing it with us. When we talk about making videos, or we talk about Pinterest and things like that, we also should remember one of the things that I've seen very, very much is women, parents, a bunch of moms will be together on a Yahoo group mailing list, and they're sharing knowledge and really quite high-level knowledge about their children and about things like this. And it would be nice if they were contributing that knowledge and sort of helping to build a database, but they aren't. And we should really think about, you know, what can we do to facilitate that? So I think there's a lot of pieces to this, starting with our attitude, including the software, including lots of different things. Last year at Wikimania, I spoke about how a lot of our procedures, particularly in English Wikipedia, where it's gotten quite complex, can be quite off-putting to newcomers. You come in and you do something that seems sort of obvious to you and it's wrong and then it gets reverted and you really have no idea why and you don't understand. And somebody tells you you need to use a template and you're like, what the hell's a template? I have no idea. So we need to really think about everything that we do from that perspective. You know, go through your daily workflow as a Wikipedian and think, gosh, if I were a complete newbie and I weren't really that computer savvy, would I be able to do this? And if the answer is no, then ask yourself, okay, well, what could I change about this workflow? Because we can change our own workflow to make it easier for other people to participate. And sometimes the answer will be there's nothing you can do. Some elements of what we do just have to be kind of hard and complicated. But a lot of it is hard and complicated for no apparent reason, in my personal opinion. Okay, next. Two more questions. Hello, oh, good answer, okay. I thought she was cheering that there were only two more questions. Where is the microphone? Somebody can just, from this side of the room, whoever has a microphone, speak up. Yes.
Hi.
Hi.
This is not much of a question. I'm just going back to the beginning of your talk. You ask people to stand up by year.
Yep.
So I would like to, the people who started editing in 2012 only, to stand up again, please. Yeah, please go on. So,
yep.
These people deserve a round of applause as much as the people who started in 2001. Please. Thank you.
That is really great. So I think next year I'll start from the other end and go that way. Okay, one more question. Somewhere vaguely over in this direction. Whoever has a microphone.
Hi, Jimmy.
Hi.
We met yesterday night at a party. And, you know, I'm from China. There's internet censorship in China. And my question is, how to develop and improve Wikipedia in countries and regions which are under the internet censorship, do you think? Thank you.
Yes, right. So the situation in China, of course, is much better than it was. We were completely banned in China for about 3 years. Now Wikipedia is broadly accessible in China, but certain pages are filtered. I've met with the Minister of the State Council Information Office, I think 4 times now, Ting and I, who was, oh, by the way, I have an announcement. We'll get to that. Ting and I went and visited him in Beijing and so forth. And our current situation with China, I think, is the same. Talking to us, but I also think they're not about to open up more pages that are blocked now. In terms of advice for the community, I think there are a lot of different things that people can do, particularly as
in many of the places where the censorship, the language is a large enough language that there are people from outside the country who can do things that people from inside the country can't. I remember years ago when the Taiwanese community were telling me about how they were helping the Beijing Wikipedians. Whenever they were blocked, they would help them find a new anonymous proxy. They would just sort of go onto the Skype channel and do that. And I think there's a lot of things that people can do like that to help each other. Because in many countries, the censorship is really quite local to their local political situation. And so if you live in one country where your local politicians pages are blocked and it's hard for you to edit them, you should maybe do a trade with somebody in another country who their local politicians are blocked and write about each other's politicians or something like that. The other thing you can do, and this is, unfortunately, this is something that is going to be a bit small scale, but if you reach the right people, it can be really powerful, is learn about circumvention tools. Learn which ones are convenient and fast, and teach other people how to use them, and help spread that knowledge peer-to-peer through the culture, so that people really can work their way around censorship. I think it's incredibly important, which unfortunately will be small scale, because you'll only be able to reach people who are technologically savvy. The other thing you can do is if those tools, a lot of the circumvention tools, things like Tor, are too slow and too hard to use for a lot of people. And so if you're tech savvy yourself, I think that a lot of the open source projects that are dealing with this kind of thing, they need help, they need more developers, people to be passionate about that kind of thing. So I believe that is my last question. And I just want to thank everyone for coming. I just want to talk about the burst of blood vessel here. Ping, our previous chair, has unfortunately retired from being the chair of the board, and yesterday we elected our new overlord, which is Kat Walsh.
Countries represented here at Wikimania, go and partake in Wikimania.
I am senior designer.
He makes t-shirts?
Yeah.
Are you software designer?
Fashion. Yeah. Software.